everyone, and welcome to Advanced Engineering Talks, a podcast created by the Advanced Engineering team. A Talks brings together some of the newest and most innovative minds in engineering and manufacturing to help better the future for our industry. We hope you enjoy the series.
So I'm thrilled to tell you that today we're talking clean skies and sustainable aviation in today's podcast with one of the most important players working towards the realization of daily hydrogen electric flight. And that's Sergei Kiselev, VP of Europe at ZeroAvia. I'm looking forward to welcoming Sergei in a moment. Before we move on to Sergei, just a very quick intro as well to my co-host today, who's being quite a champion of the Advanced Engineering event over the last few years, Gerald Law, welcome. Hi, Gerald. You are, of course, the CEO of InnovationDB, which is probably the world's most comprehensive database, actually, of innovations that are coming up all the time. You're always on top of what's coming out of universities, research institutes in science and technology. And lots of big companies, corporate organizations across many sectors subscribe to your database to see if they can hook up and invest in those technologies. So great to have you with us as well. And just a quick question, actually, before we move on to Sergei and talk more about ZeroAvia specifically. What have you seen, or have you seen too much in terms of innovation in this sector, the clean skies in general, propulsion or even materials, whichever?
Well, you precisely said it correctly. I mean, we track about 20,000 research institutions, universities globally. And we look for technologies that look like they might have a commercial application. And then we have customers in many sectors, in automotive, engineering, chemistry, all sorts. So we see all sorts of different things that could have an impact on aviation, from extremely low friction surfaces that could be used to reduce drag, to novel designs of aircraft, and of course engines, and different ways of flying them with things in the air all the time that you take stuff up to, and you know, and all of those sorts of different scenarios that people come up with in the academic community. And I must admit, I have not been a fan of the shift to electric vehicles at all, because it has always seemed to me that something with hydrogen in it was a much more sensible way to solve the problem.
Yeah.
But there used to be an extraordinary lack of imagination. You would have people say, oh, well, yes, hydrogen engines, that's no good, because hydrogen, you know, it bonds very easily. So it's not just sitting around there doing nothing, and it costs an enormous amount of energy to produce it. And all it really took was someone to use some, you know, solar panels to make the you know, to separate the water into the hydrogen and oxygen, and the problem disappears. But people get so ingrained in their way of thinking that the obvious, you know, universally available product gets passed over because they can't think that extra step. So yeah, I think there are many different areas from, as I say, you know, use of you know, graphene in coatings, for example, to make incredibly smooth wings, that sort of stuff, in combination with novel approaches to engines that could make an absolutely extraordinary difference to this sector.
Right. Interesting. Well, let's move on to Sergei. Sergei, to fully introduce you again, thanks so much for joining us. You are welcome. You are the VP of Europe for ZeroAvia. Sergei, I guess I think a lot of people will have heard of ZeroAvia because you're a lot in the news. You've done lots of not long ago you were a startup, really. You started in about 2018, I think, and you've been going great guns from there in terms of propulsion technologies, testing, and even partnerships now already with some regional airports, which looks really exciting. But just to literally take a step back, would you be able to perhaps give us an overview of ZeroAvia's mission and vision in general?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for inviting, and thank you for the introduction. Yes, ZeroAvia is Our mission is to facilitate the decarbonization and the increase of the sustainability angle of aviation, because in the last years in particular, you know, there are all these, of course, concerns about how sustainable we are, how sustainable is our growth trajectory, you know, all this, you know, flight shaming movements are up on the rise. And we are cognizant that aviation sector is one of the toughest to decarbonize.
Sure.
And it can compete actually with the likes of the steel industry, or, you know, cement, or, you know, fertilizer manufacturing for that matter. And the reason why it's so hard to decarbonize is because it's the energy density of the jet fuel and the efficiency of the engines, especially for the large aircraft, are pretty impressive.
Right.
And one of the ways to deal with that is to think about something which is, you know, similar in terms of the energy density. And in this case, hydrogen is, of course, the natural candidate, because it's the most energy dense material, not in terms of the volume, of course, but in terms of the weight in particular.
Yeah.
And the efficiency of the hydrogen fuel cells, which we are utilizing for our propulsion, or as a power source, are super efficient. So it's we can achieve north of 50, you know, close to even 60% of efficiency in terms of the conversion of energy into electricity in this in hydrogen fuel cells.
Right.
So this is exactly what we are working on, and as I said, our goal is to facilitate the energy transition and the sustainability transition of the aviation sector.
Interesting. Yeah, that's great. I mean, obviously, you mentioned actually as a mission even is a hydrogen electric engine in every aircraft. And obviously, you know, you're talking about the fuel cell way of using hydrogen. Do you think, do you have a view on, you know, what people like Airbus are talking about, maybe for the longer haul, larger commercial aircraft, such as actually, you know, hydrogen combustion in a gas turbine? Or do you think that's, do you think the two will potentially coexist? Or do you think one will win over the other, perhaps?
So there are two cuts we can think of. One is the time sort of cut,
right.
And another is technology, right? So in the foreseeable future, I think that foreseeable is maybe 10 to 15 years, we see that the use of hydrogen as in combustion engines will probably be more realistic than you know, large size transcontinental capable, you know, flying aircraft on using hydrogen electric. And the reason why is because it is quite I would say it's not an easy step, but it's manageable step for the engine OEMs like Rolls-Royce, GE, etc. To go from you know, traditional jet fuel combustion to, engine to a hydrogen combustion. Okay,
yeah.
So in this, you know, time frame of the, you know, the next 15 to 20 years, I think that it's probably for the large aircraft it's going to be competing with what we are working on now. In terms of the technology, it actually there are some discussions and there are some projects going on where you can actually use both hydrogen combustion and hydrogen fuel cell, hydrogen electric fuel cell engine in parallel, and you call it a hybrid.
Yeah.
And one will help another, of course. And of course, you know, you can foresee that during the takeoff, for example, they can work together. And when, you know, during the cruise, you will just leverage, for example, hydrogen electric only. Okay. So from technology standpoint, I think that it is also quite interesting in the short medium time frame. But going forward, we as a company, we believe that we have a path to the regional aircraft size technology in terms of the, you know, equipping it with hydrogen electric powertrain. So this is about let's say 100 passengers, 900 passenger aircraft, similar to you know, CRJ type of family. And then of course, when we get into the narrow body and then wide body, you would need to do some significant body redesign in order to accommodate hydrogen tanks, because you know they need to occupy quite a bit of space. And there are some designs already, or at least on paper. If you look at, for example, the effort which was done under the ATI last year, they came up with the design of the narrow body.
Yes, was that the Fly Zero project?
Zero projects. Yeah. It was it was impressive effort, and we welcome this work, because it's it shows that you know, with all the, you know, mental power which was put and engineering power which was put into this project, there is a solution, and you know, it's just a matter of, I guess, time to and effort to implement it.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of the time frames of well, in terms of what you're looking at, for instance, at Zero Avia, you've already started doing deals with these regional airports. Actually, can you mention a little bit about what they involve and what the time frame might be in terms of, you know, people experiencing this on an everyday regional basis?
On top of, you know, being a VP of Europe, I am a chief business officer. So when we talk to our potential clients or partners, and mostly it's airlines. So right. Of course, the question they ask is, you know, where do we get hydrogen? How do we refuel it? Yeah. Who's going to take care of that? Now there is nobody doing anything like that. Okay. And then you go to the airports, and the airports ask questions about, did you think about the safety?
Yeah.
Where are you going to store it? Is it going to be gas? Is it going to be liquid? How far does it need to be from, you know, existing infrastructure? Where are you going to refuel that? And for them, this is quite obvious questions, because they used to pretty much the single fuel operations on the airport. And now there is something new, which is, I guess, first time in the history of the airports, right? So therefore, all these questions are quite natural. So for them, it is important to work on, as I already mentioned, all the safety cases, all the operational requirements from both the either transport hydrogen in, compress it, store it, and then refuel, or think about the local generation of hydrogen using, for example, what we do at our airport in Cotswold, in just utilize an electrolyzer to produce hydrogen, then store it, and then compress it, and then, you know, using our refueling truck to transfer it to the aircraft. Or actually, we were the first to build modest but operational land sides to air side line, which can enable also refueling of the aircraft, where the all the hydrogen generation and storage, and actually, you know, all the high pressure hydrogen assets are on the land side, and the only aircraft and the small, basically, you know, hydrogen distribution system on the air side. So this is the type of questions our clients and partners are asking, and this is the reason why airports are eager to learn, because for them it's not only the operations which might be impacted, but also they might become the energy producing entities, right? So which is quite exciting for the airports.
Yeah,
this is what they're looking for as well.
And I suppose my question there about the energy production side of things from the beginning of the whole process, how much of an extent do you see that being able to be done in volume production or electrolysis of hydrogen, and also itself in a renewable fashion at that level? Is that something that's going to be a bit of a challenge, do you think, or is it, you know, on its way already?
So it is a journey. You need to look at where the renewable power generation, or for that matter, it's actually not, you know, we can use not only renewable, but also, you know, nuclear power generation as well, which is carbon free, or hydro for that matter.
And of course, there's a lot of talk about, again, here in the UK, about small modular reactors as well, isn't there? So perhaps you may find a link with them as that moves forward. I don't know if that's... Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, Rolls-Royce is leading the game here. And, you know, I can foresee in the future, you know, the link between small nuclear reactors and hydrogen electrolyzers being established and working quite efficiently. But in general, we understand that with the way renewable power generation is developing, especially wind and offshore wind, it is competing with the traditional power generation without any subsidies.
Yeah.
Okay? Right. Right.
It's just a matter of time to you know, for this capacity to be ramped up. And what is also important is that about I was working at one of the largest consultancies in the world, you know, like 10, 15 years ago. And back then we were dreaming about hydrogen. And we were talking about hydrogen as inter and intra-seasonal storage of energy. So what it means is that you can, for example, for the interday, as an interday storage, what you can do is when wind is blowing, when solar is, you know, is generating electricity, you generate hydrogen and then you store it.
Yeah.
And you use it when you need it, right?
Yeah. If I may cycle back though, I'm curious that you started with the commercial airlines and not with, say, the US Army or the US Air Force or something, because obviously the regulatory affairs aspect sits on top. So if you convince Heathrow that you've got a safe solution, they still have to convince the CAA and the UK government and all the people around Heathrow who protest all the time and all the rest of it. Whereas if you go to something like I just pick them at random, but the US Air Force obviously own all their air bases themselves all over the world. So the issue of how you refuel when you land somewhere is one thing, fueling up at your home destination. But when you get to a completely different country with a different regulatory setup that might not be very keen on this, I can see the little bits of experience I've had of regulatory affairs. I mean, that can put 15 years on the rollout of a mobile technology. You know, going from 3G to 4G was delayed by at least a decade in the UK because of our government. That sort of issue I'd have thought was massive. And I'm surprised that you haven't focused on people that give you the complete solution in the way that a military customer might?
So I think that in order to have the broad perception and reception of the technology, of course, you need to work with the public. So it is important to get the trust of the regulator, and in our case, it's primarily it's the UKCIA with whom we are working on a certification basis, and then consequent certification of our powertrain, and then of course FAA and EASA as well will be involved in that. But for us, it's important to have a very broad and large impact on carbon emissions, and of course, from aviation, the majority of it is from commercial aviation. That's point number one. Point number two, what is important for us is to work with scheduled services. So because I often get asked question about the general aviation, okay, and general aviation, they can fly anywhere, they are not scheduled, right? So they're not point A to B, and we cannot foresee or forecast where they're going to fly. The same with the military, okay? Mm-hmm. Very, very often. And what it means is that we need to have a build up of hydrogen infrastructure, at all those locations pretty much where the aircraft is going to fly.
Yeah.
And it's much easier to do it with the small set of the airports, which have scheduled services, right? And that's the reason why we believe that hydrogen hydrogen for aviation is the solution, much more so than for the ground transportation. Mm-hmm. Because for example, in order to compete with internal combustion engine fuel stations, you just need to have I don't know, something like 10,000 of stations here in the UK or something. Mm-hmm. Something ridiculous, right? So in order to give people the same level of convenience, we would need to have a lot of stations, and that's one of the reasons why hydrogen actually didn't get picked up by general public, just because it's very inconvenient. We have a Toyota Mirai hydrogen fuel cell car, and the closest hydrogen refueler in 100-mile radius is Cotswold Airport, where our hydrogen refueling facility is, and that's it.
Well, that's clearly true of everything. I mean, there were no electric power stations for power points for EVs, in this country at least, we've done a very bad job of actually rolling them out. But I mean, the same infrastructure problem existed. It's just that there was a willingness for people to push ahead with that in a way there wasn't for hydrogen. What do you think about some, if I may, Jeremy, if you don't mind
yes,
me asking another question?
Go ahead, Gerald. Yeah.
What do you think about Go Zero? I mean, these guys obviously are sucking carbon out of the atmosphere to make fuel. They have got a military customer. They've signed a contract with the RAF to simply provide what is indistinguishable in terms of how it works. I lie slightly, but fundamentally the same thing as the aircraft currently already use. It's just they're manufacturing it in a way that actually sucks carbon out of the atmosphere to create the fuel. Isn't that an even tidier solution than trying to get people to redesign their aeroplanes and build new engines and so on? What's your view, if I may, of that?
So in general, second, CO2 out of the air is a good technology, is important technology, and if you suck out CO2 and store it somewhere underwater, that's one thing, okay? if you then try to combine it with hydrogen and produce carbohydrate fuel, hydrocarbon fuels, then
you want a Coca-Cola, I think. Yes.
Yeah. Then what you end up with is you're going to use the same type of power generation units, okay? Mm-hmm. And they will be carbon neutral, of course, CO2 neutral. But the thing is that if we have, and the same thing with SAF, for that matter, it is good because it's the drop-in fuel, but it's not good because it generates actually multiple of what CO2 is in terms of the environmental impact of what CO2 is producing. So just to give you some numbers. So for example, if you're producing a ton of CO2 in your internal combustion engine or your turbine on the aircraft, the environmental impact from that will be about 2.5-3 times bigger than from CO2 by itself. And the reason why is because there are all this NOx or nitrogen oxides which create quite a bit of the environmental impact, greenhouse impact, then contrails, which are very fine micro dispersed water vapor particles, which also create the shielding impact from in the upper atmosphere. So even if you remove the carbon impact, all the rest of the stuff gets produced, which is, as I said, 2 to 3 times actually bigger than just the impact from CO2 by itself. So, good that we are doing it. Good that, it's a drop-in fuel. It is good for the intermediate solutions. But it's not the long-term sustainable solution for the environment.
And you mentioned SAF, sustainable aviation fuel, or sometimes I've heard it said as synthetic aviation fuel or aerospace fuel. So things like biofuels and things like that. And I'm guessing you see that as a sort of interim thing, or do you think that things in the longer future that could coexist in some instances, some use of those sort of fuels?
So SAF technology, it exists now, and yes. It is, again, it's a drop-in fuel, which is good. And that's the only solution for the long haul, for the long distance, right? Transportation.
Yeah.
The majority of missions, actually 80% of all flights are, something like 500 nautical miles, okay? So and we are building the aircraft now, which is capable to the engine, which is capable to work on distances about 300 nautical miles for the 19-seat aircraft, and then of course expanding the flight envelope for the larger aircraft to reach something like 500 nautical miles. But this is work in progress, right?
Yeah.
But SAF, you can use it now pretty much with some modifications, very small modifications in terms of you still need to do something with the turbines, I understand. But in general, it's not much change from the operational standpoint. So for the short and medium term, I think that's and especially for the long distance travel, that's probably the only solution which can be lower. I wouldn't call it low carbon, or it's low carbon, but it's not low environmental impact, I would say.
Cool. And what sort of, in an ideal world, you may be talking to these people already, but are there sort of partners from parallel sectors and industries that you're really wanting to talk to help move forward? For instance, lightweighting materials people, or you know, people who are doing other things, or storage technologies for hydrogen, you know, what materials or what you know, processes might be used. I'm guessing you need to know more about that ecosystem and dealing with more of those people. I mean, I think, Gerald, you mentioned some of those, some of the innovations that you see. Mm. Are there some of those that you're, you know, looking for more than others, you know?
Absolutely. For us, one of the challenges, you know, there are two major technological or technical challenges for us. You know, one is, of course, the weight of the system.
Right.
And, you know, all the lightweight technologies are, you know, will be of help. And I'll talk about this a bit more. And, of course, the thermal management is one of the key topics. And if you talk about the first one, it is, you know, we are targeting it from a couple of different angles. So, of course, we at Zero Avia, we are developing our own electrical motor. So it will be the best in class, the most power dense electrical motor with, you know, which is capable of producing something on the order of 900 kilowatt of power, you know, and with power density of something like 25 kilowatt per kilogram. And you know, that's one thing. Of course, it will be integrated with our own inverters, and just by the nature of integration, you can achieve significant space and weight savings. Okay. Then we are working with our partners. So, for example, we have a low temperature PEM partner, which is a Swedish company Paracell. With whom we have been working for over 3 years, and we have flown our first aircraft. Now we are flying Dornier using their systems, and of course, you know, certain steps they are making in terms of lightweighting, using different materials, but you know, different type of packaging, but also different going to maybe even to higher temperatures, and call it not LTPM, but MTPM, so medium temperature proton exchange membrane. And also recently we acquired a company, HighPoint, which is actually working with the high temperature PEM technology, which is going to actually be probably the leading solution for larger turboprops and, of course, larger aircraft. And the reason why is because, I don't know if you saw our recent press release, but we, together with them, now they are part of the company, we achieved the power densities, which we understand will be able to give us something on order of 3 kilowatt per kilogram, which is a few times, you know, more than low temperature PEM can achieve today. And it will save us quite a bit of headache with the thermal management, because, you know, it will work at higher temperatures. And what is also important, you know, the point, you know, Jeremy, you raised, you know, all this storage media.
Yeah.
And for us, you know, we started one big project with one of the leading manufacturers of hydrogen compressed hydrogen tanks, which will be able to save us, you know, a few hundred of kilos of you know, of weight, which is you know, you can imagine that for the 19-seat aircraft, a few hundred, a couple hundred kilos is quite essential.
Yeah.
So they using you know, different liners and different winding technology to achieve, of course, within the standards to achieve the lightweight of lightweight storage of compressed hydrogen. And then, of course, we are going to liquid hydrogen, you know, in our next iteration. And liquid hydrogen is has significantly better weight density, because you know, for hydrogen, for gaseous hydrogen, you know, 350 bar, which is typical pressure for the compressed hydrogen storage, we are talking about let's say 10 to 11% of gravimetric density of hydrogen or storage system. Now, if we go to liquid hydrogen, you know, there are solutions which are commonplace, you know, to achieve something between 30 and 40%, but there are some revolutionary technologies which brag about 60%. Okay.
Right.
So, and every single percent means, you know, hundreds of kilos of storage vessels, right?
Yeah.
Like, can I ask, going off on a tangent, but you got me thinking.
Yeah.
Since what you're doing is creating electricity on the spot, have you looked into ionic wind propulsion?
No, not yet.
Hooray! Hooray for my side. I'll send you something.
I have heard of that, and I have heard some things that have been done. Can you just literally, in a sentence, say what that technology is?
I can read it, actually, because I've got something here from New York. The innovation effectively allows a rotor to function as an engine. High voltage components charge electrodes integrated into the blades of a propeller. Air molecules around the propeller become charged, either attracted or repelled by the electrode. Resulting airflow creates an ionic wind, which turns the propeller and launches, in this case, a drone. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, we need to have scalable solutions, and those which don't have a gazillion years to certify, right? And the reason why we actually started to work with the hydrogen fuel cells, is because there is quite a bit of experience in automotive industry in particular, in using hydrogen fuel cells. There are, you know, thousands and thousands of cars. You know, Toyota Mirais or Hyundais, and now buses and trucks, you know, going around using hydrogen fuel cells. And that actually helps quite a bit in terms of, you know, building up all the safety cases, because for us it's the most important. And actually, one of the unknowns, you know, we talked about the technical challenges, right? But I think that the biggest challenge and the biggest unknown here is actually the certification.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to be the regulatory affairs guys who are going to make it all work or not. Yeah.
We call it certification experts, and because you know, our company, when I came, actually, you know, over 3 years ago now, to the UK, when we opened a legal entity here and got our first Innovate UK grant, we didn't have a certification department. Now we have the department which is working both on the airworthiness and the certification matters, and we have the certification plan, which we are working together with the UK CAA to implement, and they're helping us with identifying some, let's call it, hypothetical certification basis, so that when we enter into the certification process and we are going to submit our design for certification at the end of this year already to the UK CAA, our design will be done taking into account all this you know, certification basis.
So do you think the UK is likely to be perhaps the trailblazer for you to actually kick off from in terms of, you know, scheduled flights? I know Birmingham has been recently probably your most recent potential there with your partnership there. But yeah, I know you've looked at across other places in Netherlands and other airports. Do you think it's going to be sort of led by the UK?
Yeah, for us, UK is an extremely important place, and one of the reasons why we actually opened and started to work here, you know, one right. Is the drive for sustainability, you know, and the government commitment to that. Then, of course, you know, local knowledge base, and the last, of course, the accessibility of grants. But you know, the first is super important, and all this. There is quite a bit of regional aviation, which is aspect which is kind of, I would say, underdeveloped or underexplored across, you know, the whole world, and in particular in Europe and in the UK, which can actually save quite a bit of time, you know, for people to travel. Of course, you know, if we talk about Orkney Islands or, you know, any other islands. So, for example, the Dornier, which we are using now, we bought from Orini. Orini Airlines, which right. you know, are flying between Guernsey, Jersey, and yeah. and other, you know, mainland, let's call it, destinations. But you know, for those type of applications, you know, for the islands or for the, you know, pretty remote but not very heavily used locations, this is, you know, a perfect place to start, right? And then, given that our range is going to be at the beginning something like 300 nautical miles, you know, a place like Birmingham is ideally, you know, placed. And actually, I'm driving now, you know, from Birmingham to London.
In your Tesla.
Okay. Where you are now?
In my Tesla, exactly.
In your Tesla, of course. Yeah, quite right. Interesting. Yeah, and in terms of this, may sound a bit of a silly question, actually, but are you, you know, you're going to concentrate on manufacture and design of the propulsion system itself for existing aircraft like a Dornier, for instance, or would you see yourselves as getting involved as OEMs in air structural, you know, for manufacturing of planes themselves?
So we would like to concentrate on the power plant, and
right, okay.
We believe that we have the knowledge base, and we actually have a lot of problems to solve. Okay.
So you've got enough on as it is. Yeah.
And in particular, you know, when you know, scaling up the engine, you know, from 600 kilowatt, this is what we are working on. So we are working on a demonstrator with 1.8 megawatt. So this is three times bigger. But for example, for regional aircraft, you need to have, you know, 5 megawatt or 10 megawatt. So which is going to be an order magnitude larger powertrain from what we are working on Adornia. And this is humongous tasks by themselves. And we would like, we believe in incremental approach. That's why we, you know, we start small and then go bigger.
Yeah.
And frankly, there are thousands and thousands of aircraft, you know, of the, you know, CS-23 or Part 23, depending on, you know, what kind of part of the world you're talking to, flying around, and you know, which can be candidates for us to retrofit. Okay, but even with that huge installed base, of course, they're not optimized for hydrogen use. So you need to have quite a bit of work to retrofit them. You know, it's not hard, but you know, the work needs to be done. Now, therefore, we are talking with different so-called clean sheet airframers, which are primarily at this point working with again CS-23 type of aircraft, up to 19 seat in terms of passenger capacity, and they wanted to work with us because they understood that electrical will not solve the problem.
Right.
And you know, there are lots of issues, of course, with you know, electrical, just pure, you know, battery electric powertrains, and you know, from weight standpoint, safety, and last but not the least is that the degradation of the batteries with time. But in case of In case of new airframers or the new airframes, which we are talking about, in the last year or so, we had something like half a dozen to ten, different discussions.
Can I again perhaps go over a slight
yes, Gerald, go ahead.
Direction, a different direction, because I'm just curious about marine applications. I mean, obviously, yeah. Space isn't an issue. Weight isn't an issue in the same way on a boat. You're still driving a propeller. Have you had any explorations around the marine ecosystem?
Excellent question. And I think that
I got a mark for that one. Didn't notice that, Jeremy. You gave me a gold star.
We'll keep that in.
So we are working on as I said 600 plus kilowatt powertrain, and this is it fits extremely well into marine and some of the heavy duty applications on the ground, ground transportation applications, and of course we are trying to design the powertrain in such a way that it's basically plug and play, and it will be similar price for marine applications as for the aviation. We'll try to preserve that. But we have not started at scale discussions with the marine application, because at the end of the day we are focusing on airspace, but there are a few players which actually reached out to us, and they wanted to have either some pilot project or something like that with on a small scale, small for marine is similar to what we have in the Dornier, but it is it is also a very hard to abate sector, but it doesn't have the same restrictions in terms of the weight, of course, and the space. And needless to say, actually, our partner PowerCell recently had an announcement about one of the big orders they received in the marine space. So yes, it is. It is something. So for us, the way we think about this is that some sort of scheduled transportation, for example, ferrying or which have very high energy density or high energy consumption.
Mm.
So, and the reason why and that this will be ideal for hydrogen. And why? Because again, we don't need to build out a lot of different locations, for hydrogen, storage and then refueling, and therefore aviation and marine are very, nicely, suited for that.
Good.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. So that could be something, another application going forward. And
trains for that matter,
That's,
you already heard about some of the pilots in Germany. There was a project here in the UK as well, it's the reality. It's not the future anymore.
Yeah, certainly in the rail sector, you're right. Yeah, okay, that's really interesting. And in terms of looking forward for the next X number of years, the next decade, let's say, do you see there being a sort of your manufacturing center and supply chain development being in the UK quite a bit, or also would it be in other parts of the world like Europe or America, do you think?
So it's a good question. Now we are very committed to the UK. We built our R&D center, and now my team is looking at actually three different locations here, in the UK, close to Cotswold, where we are based. But closer to where the manufacturing talent is, because being in the middle of Cotswold, it's kind of hard to
You got Jeremy Clarkson up there. What are you talking about?
Great.
But of course. Given the range which is available for our aircraft, it is going to be, at least for the time being, it's going to be the regional play. Therefore, we will have some sites, at least the retrofit sites, both in the UK, in US, where you know this type of aircraft actually are used quite extensively as well, and in Europe, and then of course South America and Middle East and Asia. You know, this is what we are currently working on.
Yeah, I can imagine this being very popular in India. As an example,
do you see it as almost going forward, a competition to some extent might be with the eVTOL type craft that someone like Vertical Aerospace is doing, or I suppose it'd be more sort of long distance than those, wouldn't it, because they're a bit more in big city point to point with smaller, almost like air taxi capacity rather than 100 plus passengers.
The eVTOLs in general, they are creating new type of transportation. And therefore, you know, they're creating either a new type of emission, or you know, they create a new type of transportation without emission. Now, we are attacking the existing problem. And the existing problem is, of course, you know, the cleanliness of the of aviation, right?
Yeah, fair enough, absolutely. Well, I think we're sort of feeling like it's probably time to come to a close, actually. And was there anything else that you wanted to? Itching to bring up, Gerald, with Sergei, or anything, Sergei, that you wanted to make sure we knew about in our cast? Or
I've got one question. I wouldn't say I was itching, but it has been at the back of my mind all the way through.
Yeah.
And the it's a slightly unkind commercial question. How many years away do you think you are from the inevitable cheap Chinese alternative?
I think as soon as we get into commercial operations and show that it's viable and people start buying it and flying it at scale, I think that it will be it will get into the airspace. I mean, Chinese are impressive, so the cost parameters for hydrogen fuel cells are just amazing. The same thing is, they are basically, a few times cheaper than our Western analogs, but they don't have the same, parameters in terms of the longevity and the end of life parameters. So they're losing there, but, they're learning quite fast and, they're building gigafactories, and when giga starts to kick in, the learning curve becomes very important, I think that it's going to be fast, as I said, soon after we get into successful commercial operations. But again, I think that we have some of the key advantage we have is in terms of certification path. It takes time to get the certification agency to trust you and trust the technology which you're using. And if you want to put a nut and bolt on the aircraft, it needs to have a traceability to beginning of life. So therefore, anything we are using, will go through the same scrutiny, and and that's actually an important head-on start, which we got here.
Interesting. Yeah. Thanks, Sergei. Well, I think I'll have to bring things to a close now. Thanks ever so much for a great conversation to both of you. Sergei, especially thanks for you to take the time at the airport there to chat with us. It was great. And
no, actually, I am at Starbucks. Yeah.
Oh, you're in Starbucks. Okay. Brilliant. Even better. So that's nice. That nice little environment.
No advertisement.
You know? Oh, there you go. There you go.
But I'm using. I'm using.
We're audio only, I'm afraid. So.
But I'm using the aviation headset, so you probably have good, quality of
yes,
voice.
Yeah, well, I saw that, very
and
appropriate.
And it goes with the branding as well, you know, that's the thing.
Yes, it does. Well, Sergey Kislev, VP of Europe at ZeroAvia, thanks so much for joining us. And also to you, Gerald Law, okay. CEO of Innovation DB. Fantastic chat, and we'll talk, hopefully catch up soon. Sergey, it'd be great if you had any opportunity for speaking again at this year's live Advanced Engineering Show, which is happening in 1st and 2nd of November in Birmingham, but that might be something I can perhaps chat to you later on. But thank you both so much, and
pleasure, Jeremy.
Take care, both of you. All the best.
Take care. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you.